For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. And this is Atlanta. The food, the wine, the entertainment, the lifestyle. This is Melinda Skelton's Atlanta Living.
Brought to you this hour by Progressive Medical.
And welcome to Atlanta Living. I'm your host, Melinda Skelton. Most often when we think of Southern food, we think of the classics like fried chicken, cornbread, pimento cheese, okra, biscuits, hoe cakes. I bet a lot of you don't even know what hoe cakes are. I love them. However, Southern cuisine is so much more than fried and buttered fare. In her new cookbook, Secrets of the Southern Table, a food lover's tour of the global South, that just came out or is about to come out in May, beloved Southern cooking expert and award-winning author Virginia Willis travels throughout the South, truly, on a mission to document this diversity and delve into the rich narrative shaping modern Southern food culture. So thank you so much, Virginia, for joining us in the studio.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you for having me.
And I'm so glad I grew up with a family garden and canning and freezing. And I love that Southern food is not just Southern anymore.
It's, well, the traditional is so wonderful, and there's so much more, right? So,
yes.
I mean, who doesn't love fried chicken and biscuits? But there's also just a lot of different recipes that I'm trying to feature in the book that are different flavors and cultures.
And you've taken what you've done in this cookbook that is really different than other cookbooks is that you've taken, say, we're going to talk to someone about shrimp. We're going to have a shrimp dish. Well, we talked to a catcher. And you have an essay with that person.
So each chapter, I have two stories about a farmer, a harvester, a maker, a catcher, and sort of dig a little deep on that. So in the seafood chapter, for example, there is a story about the Vietnamese shrimping community along the Gulf Coast, and very specifically in Houston, Texas.
Tell us a little bit about that.
I wanted to really explore the South, and so there it is a cookbook, and there are recipes, but my friend and photographer Angie Mosier and I, over the course of 8 months, traveled to 11 different states, getting to meet people, getting to know their story so that we could photograph and document it, so that I could write their story and include it in the book. So I have a blend of the traditional and old-fashioned. And then just for example, the gardening chapter, the vegetable chapter, I start with Will Harris from White Oak Pastures.
Yeah.
Now, White Oak Pastures was founded when Will's ancestor came home from fighting in the Civil War for the Confederacy. And the other essay in that chapter is Matthew Rayford, whose farm is also a heritage farm, one of the oldest African-American farms in the entire country. And his farm was founded when his ancestor was emancipated from slavery.
Wow.
So that's where I started, right? Because the South, there is a lot of black and white in our politics and our food and our religion and our culture and everything. But then there's so much more, right? There's the Vietnamese shrimpers in Texas. There's the Latinos in Kentucky. There's so much rich diversity here.
And their culture of food kind of seeps into to our culture of food.
Exactly. So we were looking at the Southern stir fry. Many people may not realize it, but there's been a community of Chinese in Mississippi since just after the Civil War, and they were brought here or immigrated here to work the plantation farms because the enslaved Africans were no longer there to work it. So there's Chinese food in Mississippi since the late 1800s, you know, which we kind of
had no idea.
Exactly, right? And then there have been Greeks in Birmingham since the 1800s, the Greeks in Tarpon Springs, Florida. And so it may not go far, right? So it's, but in those individual communities, those food ways marry with the traditional Southern food ways, and I think they improve one another.
Oh, absolutely. Now, when did you start seeing fried chicken, greens, okra, cornbread kind of spread throughout the country?
You know, Southern food is so popular, and I think that one reason is that it's just the traditional foods for
good.
Sure. It's good.
It's just good.
It's comfort food. You know, it's tremendously popular. I've seen I've been to Southern food restaurants in L.A. and Portland and New York. It's very popular, and I honestly don't see any sort of signs of that abating.
No. And so have you ever thought of opening a restaurant?
I have. I think anyone that likes to cook has thought about opening a restaurant. And I've worked in restaurants. I've mostly worked more on the media side. Mm-hmm. You know, my first job cooking was on a TV cooking show, mm-hmm. and I've worked with a lot of people, Martha and Bobby and all that, on their shows. I feel like in a way I might do it in reverse. When I'm ready to retire is when I'll open a restaurant. So give me another 10 or 15 years.
That's awesome. So this is your what number cookbook?
I have three y'all books, and then I have a book about grits and okra. So this is officially my sixth book.
Sixth book.
Yes.
And James Beard Award winner.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
James Beard Award winner.
I'm teasing.
No, I mean, that is the most coveted thing that in your industry that you could possibly garner.
Certainly. My book, my last book, Lighten Up, Y'all, received a James Beard Award in 2015. And
what did that feel like?
Well, it's life-changing. I don't know how to describe it any other way. I mean, it's like the highest accolade that someone in the restaurant industry could receive is a James Beard Award for chef, and then for food writers and cookbook authors. And actually, the James Beard Award were just last night. It really is life-changing. It's the ultimate respect from one's peers.
Yes. And that means more than a lot of the from writers and producers and hosts. I mean, from your peers.
Right. Because everyone that's a judge is in the profession.
Yes, absolutely.
So the bar is pretty high.
Absolutely. So tell us about the cookbook and some of your favorite recipes that we can find.
Sure. So Secrets of the Southern Table, it comes out May 1, and I have a big launch party on Monday night at the Atlanta History Center.
Is that open to the public?
Yes, it is. It is. The Atlanta History Center, it starts at 6 o'clock, and we'll have a reception, and then we also I'll have a talk with Angie about our travels throughout the South. It's divided as one would typically divide a cookbook. I've got different chapters and vegetables and grits and seafood. And
now, how have you seen grits accepted throughout the country? Because, you know, when a northerner or someone from the north, they're like, grits, I don't do grits. I do cream of wheat or something else. How have you seen grits?
Grits, I think that are becoming more popular. When people tell me they don't like grits, I just say, well, how do you feel about polenta? And then they say, oh, I like polenta. I'm like, okay, well, you just hadn't had the right grits yet.
Right.
You know, because it's essentially just the same thing. Not exactly, but essentially the same thing. You know, if they're prepared properly and it's a good quality grit, like something from Anson
stone
Mills
ground.
And stone milled grilled, things like that, and slowly cooked, you know, when they're cooked a proper long time, 45 minutes, they taste good.
They taste good. And like a grit cake with shrimp around it,
right,
there's nothing better.
It's delicious. Yeah, no, I consider myself a bit of an apostle when it comes to some of these things. Like an okra missionary, a grits apostle, trying to spread information about Southern food. But I also, in this book, I tried to have a balance of recipes that were traditional, along with some that were influenced by some of these other cultures that we've spoken about. And my main thing is that I want to write cookbooks, and I have written this cookbook that has recipes that real life people want to do.
Right, you know? Right. That you would cook, like tonight, evidently, we're having chocolate chess pie and biscuits.
Yeah, y'all might need a vegetable in there. I'm just going to throw that out at you.
Evidently. Oh, and I think some Brussels sprouts might be thrown in there. But that's what he's choosing for us right now through the book. So as you're going through the book, how is it hard to narrow it down to to put things in a book?
Well, it's I'm very strategic with things. It's just sort of my nature. So I want to make sure that I have dishes that are appropriate throughout the seasons. So I want to have a balance of dishes that would be great in spring, great in summer, great in fall, great in the winter. And part of that is, of course, to follow the seasonality of vegetables and things like that. You know, if a vegetable's in season, it's not only going to taste better, it's also probably going to be cheaper, you know, because it hasn't been flown in from another hemisphere.
So do you ever use canned?
Seldom. I should say seldom.
Okay.
I mean, I usually have canned beans. I keep canned beans. I'd very rarely have canned vegetables. Although I do have this weird affinity for canned asparagus because my grandmother used to serve it, and I know
Virginia.
I know.
Slimy.
I know it's nothing like real asparagus.
What do you do with it?
She would put the can in the refrigerator, and put a mimosa, like chopped egg, on top, and call it asparagus salad.
Uh huh.
So I just, you know, it's like one of those things. You know, I had it as a kid.
Yeah.
And so I have a comfort food memory with it.
Right.
If I actually think about it, yeah. I mean, canned asparagus is terrible, or can be terrible, I should say. I would if I were going to go for something that had been put up, more than likely it would be frozen.
So okay.
I think that's really realistic. You know. People coming in from work and they're busy and all that kind of stuff. You know, prep does take some time.
Okay, we're gonna take a break. We're speaking with Virginia Willis and her book, Secrets of the Southern Table, a food lover's tour through Global South, through the Global South. And we're going to take a break. We'd love to take your calls if you have questions for Virginia about some of her recipes or things that you're trying that aren't working. We'd love to hear from you, 404-872-0750. That's 404-872-0750. We'll take your calls right after this.
Now, back to Belinda Skelton.
Thank you, Scott. And Virginia Willis and I are sitting here, my guest today on the show, Secrets of the Southern Table, are sitting here reminiscing about childhood. You know how our grandmothers would pour the coffee in the saucer mm-hmm. and the cup and drink the saucer first? And, you know, great memories like that. And work in a garden growing up, and that was so much fun. At the time, we didn't think so.
No, at the time, it was terrible.
It was terrible. It was hot. It was
the
okra
hot.
Was itchy.
Yep.
But now, looking back, that was some of my favorite memories. So I'm going to ask her the secrets to the perfect cathead biscuit, and she's got literally step-by-step instructions so you can have the perfect biscuit. And you can do that by giving us a call at 404-872-0750. That's 404-872-0750. It has to make your heart explode to see all these young kids getting into cooking at such an early age now.
Well, I think
and
so.
The passion.
I mean, that's when I started. You know, there are pictures of me making biscuits with my grandmother at 3 years old. And I know that is why I'm sitting here talking to you today about this cookbook. You know, it's...
I mean, you're like a rock star. Now, I mean... Before, people who were just in restaurants and chefs uh-huh. and cookbook authors, well, that's just what they were. But now they're legendary. They're rock stars.
There's definitely a celebrity piece
culture
to the culture with chefs and some authors to a certain extent. And a lot of that, of course, is Food Network
sure.
and the different shows. And that's all wonderful. And I think that the part that is especially good is that it increases awareness of people for food and cooking, sort of rises the rising tide, you know, raises all boats. So sort of thing. So,
yeah.
You know, people need to know where their food comes from, and you need to know how to cook. You know, that being at the table together is really important.
And good, wholesome food.
Yeah. Good food that's good and good for you.
Absolutely. Folks, we'd like to hear from you, 404-872-0750. That's 404-872-0750. Next segment, we're going to tell you where you can see Virginia and get her book and have it signed. I mean, this is what my mother would call a keeper. You know, you need to get one for yourself and one for your neighbor or a loved one. And
Mother's Day is coming up.
Mother's Day is coming up. So definitely that would be the perfect gift. And it's all the recipes that that you want to hang on to and pass down generation to generation. We're going to come back with our final segment with Virginia next. So give us a call, 404-872-0750. That's 404-872-0750. And I'll learn to make the perfect biscuit right after this.
Is News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. And this is Atlanta. The food, the wine, the entertainment, the lifestyle. This is Belinda Skelton's Atlanta Living.
Brought to you this hour by Progressive Medical.
And thanks for joining us for Atlanta Living. I'm your host, Belinda Skelton. Well, we are sharing the secrets of the Southern Table with you, a food lover's tour of the Global South by Virginia Willis. That is James Beard Award-winning Virginia Willis. She's in the studio with us today, and we're taking your calls at 404-872-0750. That's 404-872-0750. Virginia, let's go to the phone lines and see if we can answer a few calls.
That sounds great.
Okay, how about Frank in Georgia? You're on WSB. How are you today, Frank?
Hello.
Good. How are you?
I'm fine.
What's your question for us?
No, I just wanted the biscuit recipe.
Oh, okay.
So I have a recipe in Secrets of the Southern Table for cathead biscuits. And cathead biscuits are biscuits that are large, right? They're as big as a cat's head, and that's what my granddaddy used to call them. So biscuits, I have a very clear step-by-step photo essay in the book about how to make them. But essentially, biscuits are 4 cups of flour, 1 tablespoon of baking powder, 1 heaping teaspoon of salt, 1 stick of butter, and 2 cups of buttermilk. And that is the biscuit recipe that I grew up with. There are a lot of different kinds of biscuits, but that's the biscuit recipe that I grew up with. And what you do is you take the flour and the baking powder and the salt, you put it together, and then you cut the butter in. And what that does is it helps prevent the absorption of moisture, which is going to help make a more tender biscuit. And then you add the buttermilk, stir that all together. And the key to a tender biscuit is to not overwork the dough.
Oh, that's so tempting.
It's so tempting, and that's why I have this step-by-step, hold your hand, so that I think the world would be a better place if we had more homemade biscuits.
Is it okay if everything is not completely mixed together?
So when you add the flour and the butter and the buttermilk, when you start stirring that up, it's important to stir it up just a little bit in the bowl, but when you kind of dump it out onto the surface or pour it out on the surface, it's okay that it's not all mixed together, because as you sort of fold it and start rolling it, it will continue to come together.
Okay. And you're doubling up on that if you're mixing it all together first.
If you mix it until it's a dough 100% in the bowl, then when you put it out and roll it out and punch it out, that's what's helping activate the gluten, and it's going to make it tough.
Okay.
There's a lot of science behind baking, but it doesn't have to be hard.
Okay, there's one more trick. When you have your cutter and you're going down through the dough.
Right. So when you punch out a biscuit, you want to make sure not to twist the cutter, because if you twist the cutter, it can pinch and seal the dough, which will inhibit its rise. So you just want to go straight down and kind of wiggle it a little bit, but don't twist it.
How'd you figure that out?
I was taught that. I was taught that by my grandmother. She used to use an old can, you know. But now, I've gone to culinary school, worked in this business for a long time, and I love teaching people how to make biscuits. I think that there is a lot of science, but if you think about it, flour, salt, baking powder, butter, and buttermilk, it's 5 ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a bread that can be put together in 10 minutes and baked in 12, and you can have fresh, hot, homemade bread on your table in 25 minutes.
And you can do so much with it. It can be turned into a dessert.
Yeah.
It can be,
it's a vehicle for a sandwich. It can be put gravy on it and, you know.
Absolutely. Okay, let's go back to the phone lines and speak with Will. Will, he's in the driving and traffic. How are you today, Will?
I'm doing good.
Good. What's your question?
Well, I live in Dothan, Alabama, but I drive through Atlanta 5 days a week. I'm a truck driver, and I was just curious as to where I could pick her book up at. Is it at like a Barnes & Noble's, or does it have to be ordered?
Yeah, no, thank you so much. So it's available at anywhere that books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. I also have a good many events if you are driving through the Atlanta area. I have the launch on Monday at the History Center. I have a class next week at the Cook's Warehouse. And next Sunday, I have a book signing at Star Provisions. So it'll be at all the independent and corporate bookstores and then also available online.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Certainly. Right. I hope to see you. If you come to a signing, I'll look forward to signing it for you.
I hope so. I don't know if they'll send me up this way, but we'll try.
Okay.
All right. Be safe on the roads, Will. Thanks for your call. And remember, Mother's Day, this is a terrific book to get for your mother for Mother's Day. And I just turned to the page for brining chicken.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the step that I always miss because I'm always falling behind and I need to get dinner on the table quickly. But evidently it's a very critical step.
So the thing is, brining is just simply the process of soaking a meat, usually poultry, sometimes pork, rarely beef, in a salt water solution. And what happens is basically, if you can imagine a cup filled with water, brining is allowing you to fill the cup over the rim.
Okay.
So say a chicken breast, just talk about chicken breast. A chicken breast has a certain amount of moisture in it. But when it cooks, it loses the moisture. So if you were able to add more moisture to it before you cook it, when it cooks and loses moisture, you're kind of ahead of the game. And I do understand that it's one step that is really tempting to cut out, which is why in this book and in most of my recipes, my brining recipe is a short 30-minute brine.
Oh.
You don't have to do it for hours. You don't have to be,
Or overnight.
Or overnight, you know, that's crazy. Now, maybe with a turkey at Thanksgiving, but if you can just brine it, it's a higher salinity, a higher salt solution, but it does the same job. And it is, and I think that's the sorghum butter roast chicken.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my Lord. That recipe is undoubtedly one of my favorites.
Oh, wow.
It's delicious.
Okay, so a typical brine, you can add any spices you want to that, right?
Yeah, so the water and the salt are what do the science to it. But if you wanted to, for example, I believe my turkey recipe, for example, I put rosemary, sprigs, and thyme, and different aromatics in that, and that also enhances the flavor. The salt and the water are the science part, and then the other things are the flavors.
Okay, stupid question.
No.
When you pull it out of the brine, do you rinse it?
No, you don't need to rinse it. So the thing about rinsing poultry, my grandmother used to scrub a chicken within the inch of its life, right? But what happens is the USDA suggests that we don't do that because we increase the chances of cross-contamination.
Oh, from it right? getting on the countertops.
Chicken and juice on the counter in the sink, and then you go to wash your zucchini or your lettuce or something. So, no, we don't have to brine it. All you need to do after you've brined something is pat it dry with paper towels. And I would say the same thing if you're just pulling a chicken or meat or something like that out of a package from the grocery store. Just do the same thing. You don't need to wash it. It's more dangerous to wash it than not.
Oh, wow. Okay. You've saved an extra step for me there. Now, how are you feeling about this craze of the Instapot?
I received an Instapot at Christmas. And, you know, I think that whatever it takes to get people in the kitchen to cook is what I'm for. So, you know, it's really, it's called an Instapot. I mean, frankly, it's just a less scary name than a pressure cooker.
Right.
Right? Because pressure cooker, even I'm terrified of pressure cookers, but call it Instapot and I'm fine.
Right.
You know, so.
I cooked a Boston butt in 90 minutes last weekend.
Right, right. No, it's.
Falling off the bone.
They're great. I mean, you know. I think that whatever it takes to get people in the kitchen to cook is a good thing.
And I was happy with it, but certain things didn't go so well, but certain things went well. Okay, so you have lots of, you're big on cooking with the season.
Yeah, I think that if you cook with the seasons, it sort of makes sense in a way. I don't know how to think of it any other way. You know, what could possibly taste better than a tomato in July or August?
Oh, yeah.
What could possibly taste better than butter beans in July or okra in July or all those things? And then go to the fall, sweet potatoes. I mean, that's when they taste their best. That's when they're the freshest. And I always go back to the part that's when they're least expensive.
Right.
You know, you're not buying a vegetable or a piece of fruit from halfway around the world where it's had to be shipped in and it was picked 2 weeks ago. You know, so eating with the seasons is a smart way to eat, I think.
Now, has there been a recipe or an item that you've just tried to cook that just gives you trouble every single time? That you just haven't mastered yet?
I'm not really good at tempering chocolate, which is pretty high tech. You know, that's like a pastry chef sort of thing. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm infallible by any stretch of the imagination, but I am a professional cook. It's what I do for a living. And if I don't do a good job with it, then I figure out what I'm not doing right to sort of correct it. And that's why I take great, great care to test every recipe. I test all my recipes. I don't have someone else do it, or if someone else helps me, then I always do it. I want to make sure that the instructions are super clear for readers.
Think of me.
Yeah, I am.
And then think, what Belinda doesn't
about.
Know when you say poach what I'm supposed
exactly.
to do.
Exactly. No, I mean, it's, and then that's true. I mean, I had something the other day, a lady emailed me. I had said something about cream, the butter, and sugar, and she emailed me. She said, there's no cream in it. And of course, there's no cream in it, but to cream the butter into sugar is a verb.
Right.
But I was pleased that she pointed out my quote unquote mistake, because I want to make it as simple as possible, as easy as possible for people to buy my cook and to cook food from my cookbooks.
That is wonderful. And I will look at a recipe, and if there are too many columns.
Yep.
I'm like,
it's a page flipper.
It's a page flipper. I'm overwhelmed and I need to move on.
That's not, you know, I don't write food for like restaurant type chef stuff. I mean, I can cook that way and I can write that way, but this cookbook, Secrets of the Southern Table, is about easy, accessible. It's accessibility is the key for everything, because people are busy.
Well, you are French trained, right?
Yeah,
but you are French trained classically. Cooking.
Yes.
And then you go back to your roots of Southern cooking.
Right. And the thing is, you know, country French cooking isn't that different than country Southern cooking. It just really isn't. And part of it, you know, it sounds different, obviously, but coq au vin is chicken stew. Boeuf bourguignon is beef stew. You know, it sounds fancy. I think that the French training and my time working in restaurants and my time working in France, all that did was sort of polish some techniques. But, you know, the way to make a pound cake and the way to make a French genoise are pretty similar. You know, it's but I just try to impart that technique and training into my work.
Thank you so much, Virginia, for joining us in the studio. And is there a website people can go to find
where you're going to be?
Yeah,
if they go to virginiawillis.com, I've got my events there. And people can pre-order books and order books and follow me on social media. I have a great time with that.
Oh, I can't wait. This is Welcome Back to Atlanta Living. I'm your host, Belinda Skelton. Gosh, I'm going through puberty. My voice just cracked there. I had to bring Virginia Willis back for another segment because we had a question about red-eye gravy, and I love red-eye gravy. So, Diane and Buford, you're on WSB. How are you today?
Oh, it's a gorgeous day. No complaints.
Absolutely. I hear you. So, what's your question for Virginia?
My grandmother used to make head biscuits and red-eye gravy. And first off, I have always been bad at making biscuits, so I'm excited to try your recipe.
Yes. Oh, yeah, good.
But the red-eye gravy, if I remember right, my grandmother would fry up like a piece of ham or something.
Yeah, so red-eye gravy typically starts with ham.
and pour coffee in it.
Yep, that's exactly right. So if you imagine a ham steak, there's a couple different things about where red eye comes from. If you imagine a ham steak, usually there's that center bone. And so there's some food lore that says that that's the eye, that that's the red eye, you know, in that middle of that red ham. And then, so you sear the ham on both sides, cook it through, and then take it out. And then you've got these little brown bits in the bottom, what's called fond in French cooking. Mm-hmm. It's called brown bits in Southern cooking. And then folks add coffee to sort of deglaze the skillet, loosen up those brown bits. And so it winds up being, and then there are some red eye gravies using Coca-Cola. If I don't know if y'all have seen that, but that is also you. So you wind up having this sour, salty, bitter, sweet, umami sauce, and that is red eye gravy.
But boy, it's delicious.
It is delicious.
And I was always told that the red eye was for the man that maybe drank a little bit too much the night before.
And that's another one, because there's not much better than absorbing the after effects of too much alcohol than biscuits and gravy.
Yeah, but it is coffee, though, that you put in it.
Yes, ma'am. It's coffee. Now, I, like I said, I have seen some with Coca-Cola, but mostly it's coffee. And, you know, that would just be using what you had, you know, using what you had.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. And now that I can make perfect biscuits.
Yeah.
Cornbread, but I've always made hockey pucks for biscuits.
Well, you just need to not need them quite so much. So please try to pick up a book and see it.
Hey, yes, ma'am, I will get the book. And Belinda, I love your show.
Oh, you're a sweetie. Thank you so much for calling.
And you have a great day.
Oh, you too, my love. You've been listening to Atlanta Living only on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.